Good afternoon. Live from Santa Fe, you're on The Journey Home, and we're the independent alternative. Today on The Journey Home, during our Music, Movies, and More Friday weekend warm-up, we have Chris Goldstein, Active Voice Radio, and we're going to be checking out some of his interviews that he does on his show that usually follows The Journey Home on Fridays, and we're going to be hearing some music that he plays as well. Chris Goldstein here for the full hour. Also this hour, a commentary from Jim Hightower.
Can campaign reform laws work? Arizona shows they can. I'll tell you about it today on Hightower Radio.
And then coming into our second hour, Aslan White and the Planet Waves Astrological Forecast, then Yoga Moments. After that, another Hightower Revisited, and then Jenny Hanifin joins Chris Quinn. Chris Quinn, our new Cinema Talk host, co-host with Jenny here. And they've got a lot of good things happening for Cinema Talk coming your way about 5:25. So that's ahead today on the weekend warm-up. Well, Chris Goldstein, a pleasure to have you here. How are you?
It's great to be here with you again, Diego, and great to be here not during a fundraiser. Usually we only get to interact during fundraiser time, so it's nice not to have to do any pitching with you today.
So today we do fun. And in a couple of weeks, we do fundraiser.
That's right. That's right. It is coming up in a couple of weeks. But today, we get to have fun. Today, we get to just hang out.
Active Voice Radio. This sounds like something of your own invention. What's that all about?
Well, Active Voice Radio is a culmination of almost 8 years on the radio for me. I hosted the Last Hours of Night radio program here from 10 to midnight for almost 7 years. And Active Voice Radio on Fridays, 6:30 usually. Tonight, we're airing the mayoral forums. But it allows me to interview a variety of authors, activists, and other types of guests, as well as feature a couple of regular segments that I do, Marijuana Policy This Week being one, and World Technology Update being the other. A friend of mine, Mike Mossy, who used to live here in Santa Fe, still produces it, lives in Tampa, Florida, and it's a great example of technology in itself being an audio segment that's emailed to me every week, as well as podcast, broadcast on my show and a couple of low-power FM stations.
That sounds fascinating. Now, the particular segments that you focus on, do they all have some sort of a central theme? What's the basic underlying overarching foundation or desire that you want to achieve with Active Voice?
Well, it's definitely a social justice-based program. You'll find that as a common theme throughout most of the interviews and most of the guests that I have on. Now, it does sound like a vague term, social justice. You know, what does social justice mean in the broader context? But I think that looking at the variety of authors that I've had on the program, you can get an idea of what that phrase really means. Mm-hmm. You know, Jane Midgley, Women in the U.S. Budget, Kathy Bergen from the American Friends Service Committee. Over the years, I've been lucky enough to have share some guests with you, actually, like Greg Palast and Sutch Ali. And
Chuck Collins, who
Chuck
will
be
here in just a couple of minutes.
That's right. Chuck, an amazing, dynamic individual out there, one of the founders of United for a Fair Economy, and a regular contributor to. I've had him on the program 3 times so far, and he's just the type of guest we love to talk to because he's constantly not just coming up with new material, but reworking his old material, revising books like Economic Apartheid in America and the like. So it really works out great for me because I do get a chance to air a great variety of people. Now I sometimes don't stick to that. I do a lot of commentary as well, so it's not all about the interview. I get a chance on my program to be pretty free in what I say, which is another great thing about public radio, especially local community radio like here at KSFR. So you can check out, folks who are interested can check out a variety of segments that are up on my website, up at activevoiceradio.com. Again, that's activevoiceradio.com. I get to post a lot of audio up there, and I'm involved with distributing audio through a series of services like Public Radio Exchange, which we're going to see The Journey Home on soon here in the future as well.
I certainly hope so. Now, we were talking about Chuck Collins a little while ago, and that seemed like a good time to actually hear some report from him, an interview you did with him, right?
Sure. This is part of a new set of distributed segments that I'm doing. I take a long interview, a 30-minute interview, like what I did with Chuck, and I'll cut it into 3 or 4 different portions. What you're going to hear now is what we call an Active Voice Radio remix, where I take electronic music and scratch mix music and sort of put a grunge mix on it where the voice and the music are married together and really complement each other in a great way. So here's Chuck talking about post-Katrina economic apartheid.
Now, Economic Apartheid in America, first released in 2000, revised just last year with a lot of interesting information. What's changed since 2000, and what kind of economic trends are staying the same to keep inequality happening here in America?
We're kind of in a steady, growing divide. So I'd say that things that have stayed the same is that wages have pretty much stayed flat or stagnant for the vast majority of people, and the concentration of wealth has grown a little bit more. The wealthiest 1% have a little bit more of a share of the wealth pie, and all the sort of causes, none of them have really been alleviated. So, you know, it's not simple to sort of point to one cause why inequality is growing in America, but basically none of the things that we could do to slow or reverse inequality have been done. So we're kind of on a steady path towards a new chapter of economic apartheid.
It seemed, Chuck, that right after Katrina, in fact, just a couple of days after Katrina, these issues of economic inequality in America, especially along racial lines and in some ways very regional lines here in America, would have begun to have been dealt with. Have you seen any positive growth in that direction, or has this argument sort of fallen away?
I think what Katrina did was kind of pulled away the mask. A lot of the symptoms that we talk about in economic apartheid are somewhat below the radar screen. You know, the fact that people aren't able to save money, that they're going deeper into credit card debt, that more people are working two jobs or multiple jobs to keep their household together. There's a lot of people living in sort of quiet desperation, quiet struggle. So I think what Katrina did was it sort of showed that there was this enormous chasm in America, just sort of almost like in 1960 when John F. Kennedy read the Other America and started a war on poverty. That's what happened, was sort of a national wake-up call. And I think it's changing the culture. I'm not sure it's certain, and I think in different states, and particularly in the Gulf Coast states, there's a real desire to look at how do we rebuild the region to close the gap as opposed to widen it. How do you ensure that the jobs are paying a decent living wage? How do you expand wealth ownership through some ownership and savings, as opposed to throw more fuel on the fire of the chasm that's already there? So I think that there's a number of people, politicians and regional leaders in the Gulf Coast states, that are kind of putting forward proposals to redevelop so that the region grows together as opposed to grows apart.
From Active Voice Radio, Chris Goldstein with Chuck Collins. Now, that is an interesting way of getting some ideas across to presumably a younger audience who maybe, you know, are really not thinking about social justice issues.
Well, that's right. You know, I hope that these pieces and these types of authors like Chuck, who has in, you know, that book, Economic Apartheid in America, first came out in 2000, revised just last year. It's a great wealth of information that isn't necessarily accessible to young readers in a whole lot of ways. But hearing Chuck talk about these issues is accessible. And marrying it together with, that's one of my favorite Scratch Mix DJs. His name is DJ Cube. Marrying it together with scratch mix music like that really can try and convey these things to a younger audience, especially cut down in these little portions like that too.
Well, it's almost like you're doing a music video on the radio.
That's a good analogy. You know, when young people are very attuned to the idea of sort of the music video and also scoring their own lives with audio, the prevalence of the iPod, the portable CD player, music is an accompaniment to life. And radio needs to find new ways to be expressive and new ways to present, these serious subjects in a lot of ways. And I think that adding music with interviews is like a music video. It moves it along, it underscores emotion, and it also maybe perks up the ears of the young listeners out there.
iPods have been selling like hotcakes in all manner of MP3 players that the kids are using, although I see more of those little white earphone cables around than anything else. Do you think that this is going to offer a new channel for reaching young people using podcasting that has some sort of informational content embedded within, say, a music score like you've just done? Will iPods be the next new big thing for information as well as music?
Most definitely. You're already seeing educational institutions, school districts, high schools buying iPods for students, distributing classes, lectures, homework on these devices. They're interactive both for entertainment and for education. And I think that we're going to find a great crossover in this technology, not just for young people, but for people of all ages. This is easy technology. It's accessible technology. Podcasts, you know, you can buy music for your iPods or your cell phones or whatever, but I do some podcasting, and podcasting is like radio. To the user, it's free. So, you know, you don't pay a subscription for most podcasts out there. So it's very accessible. It's free if you're online, if you're getting this technology. It is out there. Young people especially are attuned to this stuff. They're out there seeking content that they relate to. But again, it has this great educational component, just like a laptop can be made for playing video games. It's also made for doing homework. So the iPod and the prevalence of MP3 players, audio and video delivery systems, and now you have cell phones that have iTunes and things like that built in, it will have an educational component to it, because it will be easier for educators to deliver their lessons and messages to the students as well.
You're on The Journey Home, and my guest today is Active Voice Radio producer Chris Goldstein. And we're going to hear some music now. Hey, Chris.
That's right. Fun music.
So lead us in. What we got going here?
All right. Yeah, I like to have a lot of fun on my program, Active Voice Radio. One of the more requested musicians I played is a comedy artist named Richard Cheese. He makes lounge covers of popular music, and we are going to hear right now, let me see, CD 1, number 3, we are going to hear, oh yes, Rock the Casbah. And I say this, and it's so true, if you're not driving around right now in your car and lounging out to this Richard Cheese song, there's something definitely wrong with your tempo meter, so have fun.
The Sharif don't like it, Rock the Casbah, Rock the Casbah, Sharif don't like it.
Well, I've never heard it done quite like that before. So, Lounge Lizard Chris Goldstein is here in the studio with us today from Active Voice Radio. Now, we're bringing you on this show today because, well, your normal show is getting cut back a little bit, right?
That's
because
right.
Because of the mayoral debates and discussions and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, we're airing the forums. It's part of our community service, and we've been airing the forums every night here on KSFR. So tonight is the final one of those forums. It goes up until 7:28 p.m., and then you'll hear my interviews with the Santa Fe mayoral candidates tonight on Active Voice Radio. I got a chance to sit down with them all. I think you did as well this week. I know David was in yesterday, and it's one? Well, that's true. That's true. It's very true. It's a very interesting race here in Santa Fe, and part of doing local radio is doing things like this. And you know, I find it absolutely fascinating to deal with politicians on every level. I think it's one of the most important parts of our society is the civic political end of our society. Not enough people get involved. Mm-hmm. And I'm always interested to hear from the people who do, because it's a big step to take. It's not easy being even a local city councilor.
Or a candidate for city council or mayor.
That's very true. Even just to run. It is a huge step to take as an individual, and I have a lot of admiration for people who take that step into politics. So it is fun for me to do these types of interviews as well on the program.
Yes, and I enjoy them as well. We manage between us to cover just about all the bases between you, Tom Knobloch, Mary Charlotte, myself, and others. We have quite a lot of local and federal and national political coverage here, too. And I actually married into a political dynasty. Well, it could have been.
Oh, really?
It was short-lived because, well, my wife is not a politician, however, but she is the Green City Councilor who was elected to the legendary Arcata City Council that became the very first Green Party majority of any governing body in the United States.
Arcata, California, wow.
Arcata, yes, and it was her successful campaign that allowed that to happen. And she was then elected vice mayor and would have been reelected to the council and appointed mayor had she broken a campaign promise and run for a second term.
Uh-huh.
But she refused to run for that second term. Because, well, she, like so many people, feel that local politics should be available to a wide range of local people. And if the same people keep running over and over again, well, then how are the other folks supposed to get a chance?
That's certainly true. You know, that's certainly true. Yeah. Wow, an almost green political dynasty. That could be happening here in Santa Fe one day. You never know.
Well, you know, the weird thing about it, though, it was a short-lived dynasty. I didn't really hold up my end of the bargain because I ran for city council in District 3 in 1990 as the very first Green Party candidate in the state of New Mexico. That's back when I was a Green. I've been a Green. I've been a Libertarian. I've been a Republican. I've been a Democrat. And now I'm just me, you know, totally independent. But fortunately, I got defeated, and Frank Montano won that seat. So that ended my end of the dynasty. It was stillborn, you might say.
So you've done it. You've put yourself out there. It's not easy. Especially in a small town. I think it's harder in a small town in ways than a bigger town.
Well, we have the best of both worlds in so many respects here in Santa Fe. We're still like a small town, but we have so many of the problems that a big city has. And fortunately, to balance that, many of the opportunities that a big city has in terms of culture and fine arts education and sustainability systems here that very few places around the United States have.
That's exactly right. Santa Fe, fun place. It's so fun to be involved with mayor's elections. And Santa Fe is such an important place in the region. That's what's so great about it.
It is, and it has a very important role to play in the United States as well. We have somehow bridges to the outside world that emanate from Santa Fe. Quite a number of rich and powerful people live in Lumbar Hills, and a lot of just ordinary, really creative folks are living around here, have done for generations, and have, I think, something very special to offer the rest of the country. And it's great to see so much local culture starting to have a national audience now and getting the recognition for it.
That's right. New Mexico, it's not just green chili anymore.
or green parties.
That's right.
We're here to listen to a lot of the content that you produce on Active Voice Radio, and I was wondering if we could listen to what you and Jane had to say.
Oh, yes, Jane Midgley, another one of these wonderful authors sponsored by United for a Fair Economy. Her book, Women and the U.S. Budget, Where the Money Goes and What You Can Do About It. Just fascinating, very poignant for Women's History Month. And Jane, just a spectacular individual, and demystifies the budget process in this book, a great book.
Today, we're speaking with Jane Midgley about her new book, Women and the U.S. Budget, Where the Money Goes and What You Can Do About It. We discuss why more women need to be at the budget bargaining table.
Who determines how the federal government collects and spends our money?
Well, this is a huge issue because, obviously, a lot of what I'm talking about here is what is a democracy. And I don't think we have a fully functioning democracy if we don't really have transparency and accountability in our federal budget and people don't even know what's really happening with it or what the process is. But another indicator or question that I'm putting out about do we really have democracy is that women and people of color are really not at the table in the numbers that they need to be for us to really be having a full functioning democracy.
Are we having just token input on these money issues?
I think we really are in a lot of ways, and just one statistic that I think is really important for people to understand. First of all, women are 51% of the population in the U.S., but we're only 13% of the people in Congress. And there's just a couple of women sitting on the Senate Budget Committee, for instance. I don't think that's enough when they're making such unbelievably important decisions. And another thing to remember about this, just to put it in kind of an international perspective, we rank 59th in the world in terms of our representation of women in our national legislature. So I would say in this case we're unbelievably backward. And you would think, you know, often from hearing the media and certain pundits talk that, you know, women are totally liberated and we've achieved everything and we're, you know, we've taken over everything. But I think if we really look at who's making these devastating decisions that have huge impacts, and a lot of the disproportionate impacts are on women and children, then I think we have to have a question about that. And then the other piece is, in this country, 69% of the population is white, but in Congress, 86% of the members of Congress are white. And another piece about this, the democracy piece, is that we have a huge proportion of millionaires and multimillionaires.
That's right.
In Congress, particularly in the Senate. Some people now call it the Millionaires Club.
So this makeup of millionaires, this makeup essentially of white millionaires, that's why the budget sort of looks like it's made by white millionaires, and why that money trickles down that way. It's not that the country isn't diverse, it's that our representation isn't so diverse.
Totally. And one other point about this is that another thing that they're, as we speak, trying to ram down in through this budget process is making the tax cuts that Bush and company brought as one of their brilliant budget proposals, these gigantic tax breaks for wealthy and corporations. They want to make those tax cuts permanent. In a situation where the country comes up against a huge emergency like we did with the help needed to the victims of Katrina and Rita, that's a time when everything must be on the table, including tax, not just not making the tax cuts permanent, but how about, can I say this, raising taxes perhaps? I mean, we're not even allowed to talk about that.
Jane Midgley's book is Women and the U.S. Budget, Where the Money Goes and What You Can Do About It. She can be found online at womenandtheusbudget.com.
Chris Goldstein and Active Voice Radio there. Well, Chris, you've got a lot going on here, and we're going to return and hear some more of what's up with Active Voice Radio right after this commentary from Jim Hightower. Good afternoon. You're on The Journey Home, and we have a special thing happening here on our weekend warm-up. Normally, we have music, movies, and more, and we're going to bring you some more music, and we definitely will have movies coming on with Jenny Hanifin in our next hour, along with the new guy, our new movie reviewer joining the team, Chris Quinn, and then also a couple of other features, including Aslan White and the Planet Waves Astrological Forecast. But right now, it's time to review what we're doing with Chris Goldstein from Active Voice Radio, who's here live in the studio with us today, due in part to the fact that your program has been somewhat abridged because of the mayoral forums that are continuously ongoing on KSFR, as they should be at this time. So welcome back, Chris.
Thanks, Diego. It is fun to be here outside of the fundraiser today. It is a lot of fun to be here without the looming goal over our heads here today.
No doubt we will do a lot more visiting come, what, March 16th?
19th. 19th we begin.
Okay. March 19th is when the KSFR Pledge Drive begins. And we're going to have a lot of very interesting special features, too. And
we are indeed. In fact, one of your interviews, it was with Karpinski, as a matter of fact. That'll be airing in a special
General
program.
General Karpinski.
That was a great interview. And
well, you know, I wish
capture.
I would have had another 30, 40 minutes with her. You know, because there were a whole lot of other questions that I wanted to ask her, but I wanted to make sure we got at least her point of view, what she was trying to express that has been basically blacked out of the mainstream media. But I did have a lot of hard questions that I also wanted to ask her as well. But she's in China right now, and I have no idea what she's doing there. But,
harder to reach right now.
She's a little tough, yeah. Yeah, we're able to get a lot of really good programming here on KSFR, despite the fact that we are a relatively small station. And we have, however, some relatively big voices.
We certainly do. Our station, KSFR, attracts people who want to talk to Santa Fe and the northern New Mexico region. Phil Donahue was on Mary Charlotte's show.
Mm-hmm.
So many guests that both of you do all the time. It's a litany of the who's who in the news in America and also the literary community. And it's because they want to talk to Santa Fe, but it's also because of what we do as a station. You can see on our website, you can hear when you listen this great mix of ideas that happens here on the station. And I think people sort of catch on to that, want to be part of it. So.
Yeah, they do. Well, tell me more about Active Radio, Active Voice Radio. Social justice is one of the major areas that you cover. And with that coverage comes a real focus on marijuana policy in the United States. And I was wondering maybe we could play some music and then get into your news report on that very subject in a minute.
Sure. It's a weekly report. It's actually the press release from the Normal Foundation, Marijuana mm-hmm. Policy This Week. And that is the one part. I try not to focus on marijuana at any other point during the show because I do that every week. Mm-hmm. But I did get a chance to ask all the Santa Fe mayoral candidates about their views on marijuana so far, which has been very interesting. You'll get to hear that later on this evening after the forum. But marijuana policy is an important part of the radio work that I do. I do the Normal News podcast, but uh-huh. we'll hear marijuana policy this week a little bit later, and we'll get into it with a little Pixies here, as
yeah.
a matter of fact.
Now, the music that's up next is what?
It is the Pixies. This is
the
Frank.
Pixies.
Actually, it's not the Pixies. It's Frank Black and the Catholics, and it's a tune called Adelie. And Frank Black, the Pixies, the Catholics, probably one of the best bands in history because of the great way in which they write spectacular music that sometimes has meaning and a lot of times is just music for music's sake. So great music out there.
Well, there's some music to really get you moving on the way home on your journey home today. And you know, that's not really metal, is it?
No.
It's not. It's a little harder than we normally play on the journey home, but it's soft.
Yeah, I would.
It's more like
it's rock and roll.
It's malleable.
Yeah, it definitely is. What's wonderful about the Pixies is some of the songs are downright sedate. I mean, they really are. They have some great slow ballads. Almost.
Well, we can't do that on a Friday afternoon.
No, certainly not. Not. No, we need the great Adelie, the weekend wake up song right there.
So you asked all the mayoral candidates about their views on marijuana.
I haven't had a chance to ask David Concietti. He's coming in for an interview tonight.
Yes,
but Karen Walker, David Schutz, and Cove Coviello, mm-hmm. I have had a chance to record mm-hmm. all them, yes.
And did you ask them about it in the context of medical marijuana or just in the in terms of decriminalization of marijuana?
I left it vaguer than that because it is showcased in the responses from the candidates, the variety of views about it. I asked them specifically, I think I phrased it by saying, what is your stance on marijuana policy?
Mm-hmm.
And made it very open. And I think that the variety of responses, there was definitely some show of sophistication on the understanding of the medical marijuana issue. One of the candidates cited pain being a factor in mm-hmm. the reason that they might want to legalize it. And
especially after the campaign.
March 8th, you're going to see a big movement for this. But I think that there is a growing awareness of this idea. You know, Normal News, I do a podcast, Normal News. It's ranked number 25 in the political podcasts on iTunes, and mm-hmm. it beats out shows like the Bill Press Show on a weekly basis as far as the subscription rankings. There's a hunger for information on this subject. The Office of National Drug Control Policy has their very own podcast as well, but you won't find it up there in the rankings because their information is readily available through advertising on TV every day.
Mm-hmm.
Normal, as a foundation, it's unfortunate over the years, they've been cut out of doing regular advertising buys in commercial markets, radio and television, and have really struggled to reach a lot of the people who want their content except through their website and their text press releases. I started reading your press release on my radio program, The Last Hours of Night, years ago. It's always been very popular. People always call up and say, thank you for bringing this information out. Thanks for reading it. And I started doing Marijuana Policy This Week, which airs on Active Voice Radio as well as Undercurrents here on KSFR, and has been picked up by a number of non-commercial, low-power FM and internet stations around the country. So it's very popular.
Well, let's hear your report right now. Marijuana Policy This Week.
From the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, this is Marijuana Policy This Week. I'm Chris Goldstein. topic, cannabis use not linked with so-called amotivational syndrome. More information is available at norml.org. This week from Los Angeles, California, cannabis use not linked to so-called amotivational syndrome. Cannabis use, including daily use of the drug, does not impair motivation, according to survey data published in the current issue of the journal Substance Abuse Treatment, Prevention, and Policy. 487 volunteers, 243 daily users, and 244 non-users completed items from the Apathy Evaluation Scale, or AES. Participants responded to 12 statements regarding their own feelings of motivation on a 4-point scale, e.g., not at all, slightly, somewhat, very much. Researchers have successfully used similar measures of apathy in previous studies of substance abuse and motivation. Quote, participants who used cannabis 7 days a week demonstrated no difference from non-cannabis users on indices of motivation, close quote, investigators found. After quantifying subjects' responses through advanced statistical procedures designed to identify even slight differences between users and non-users, researchers still did not detect any decreases in motivation among daily users of cannabis. Quote, these feelings refute hypothesized associations between heavy cannabis use and low motivations, close quote, authors concluded. They continued, quote, thus emphasizing a cannabis-induced amotivational syndrome in drug prevention does not have empirical support and could harm the credibility of drug prevention efforts, close quote. This has been Marijuana Policy This Week from the Normal Foundation in Washington, D.C. More information on these stories is available at norml.org. Stay tuned every week for Marijuana Policy This Week right here on this station. I'm Chris Goldstein.
No, I'm Chris Goldstein. Will the real Chris Goldstein please stand up?
A little Don Pardo there, you know, Saturday Night Live. Fun
so,
stuff.
So that was a very interesting report. I haven't heard, you know, I haven't been associated with Normal for many, many years, not since college days. Glad to see to hear they're still up and running. Sorry to hear that the medical marijuana bill did not pass through the New Mexico legislature this time around. It's an interesting topic and one that really, you know, is brimming with hypocrisy.
When you
get into the depths of why marijuana is illegal and why alcohol and nicotine and all these other more addictive drugs like that are legal. Prescription drugs, for example.
Well, one of the greatest examples there, and with alcohol, you know, Denver, there's an organization up there called Safer, and they passed a citywide initiative to treat marijuana like alcohol. It's called the Marijuana Alcohol Equalization Initiative, and that was actually passed on a couple of campuses in Texas and Florida this week as well. And because, you know, you mentioned New Mexico, the medical marijuana bill not passing again, not the first time it's been in front of the legislature.
It didn't get out of committee, right?
That's right. It went to a Water and Agricultural Resources Committee after being passed by the Senate by a vote of 36-4.
Water and Agricultural Resources, were they planning on growing it here too in vast quantities?
Yeah, that's where – well, this is what's interesting. This is what's a great part of the debate here. When you talk about medical legalization, then you have to say, okay, well, we have these patients who want to use this drug, marijuana. How do we get it to them so that they don't have to go purchase it on the black market? Well, then the state does take the responsibility to say, okay, we're going to find a way to supply marijuana to these people. And one would presume that the state would then license growers to supply medical marijuana to medical marijuana patients. This is the scenario that plays out on a daily basis in California. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is in practice out there. So, yes, it does, I guess, somehow fall into water and agriculture because there would be people somehow growing this marijuana in the state to distribute it to patients. But when it dies, see, that's the interesting thing about the marijuana issue. When a medical marijuana bill comes before the state legislature, everybody reports on it. You hear news about it. You often hear a lot of great viewpoints about it. But when it fails to pass, then you don't hear anything about it anymore. And I think that's why Normal News, the podcast, and Marijuana Policy This Week have been so popular, because people want a consistent source of that information. And the foundation does a great job. What they release in their press release every week, and what I read as copy, is the latest in medical and scientific journals and information that you just won't find unless you look for it. So it's good stuff.
Well, Chris, let's hear some more music that you've brought with you, too, to give us a sampling of what Active Voice Radio is really all about when it airs every Friday at 6:30 here on KSFR.
This is a much mellower tune. This is Mazzy Star, a great artist that I use both as a music track artist and also for some underlying beds on my Active Voice Radio remixes. This is a great track called I've Been Let Down.
You're on The Journey Home. It's our Friday weekend warm-up, and we're doing something a little different today. Rather than our standard music, movies, and more format on the weekend warm-up, we're getting a little bit more active. I almost said psychoactive. No, but that's not... We talk about global warming sometimes, so we get photoactive, you know? But today, Active Voice Radio producer Chris Goldstein is here in the radio studio with us today. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks, Diego. Your non-psychoactive producer, Chris Goldstein, here today.
Let's play something here that you've put together, another one of your clips, a local guy who's a tourist in Santa Fe in a report. Tell us about this one.
Being local in a tourist town. Well, I've lived here for almost 10 years now, and came from the East Coast like so many other folks here in Santa Fe. And this was a little piece of radio commentary that I did for my my webcast in December of this year. And I actually moved out here in the wintertime, so I have a special place in my heart for Santa Fe winters, and I always get a little, I don't know, reflective about the town in the wintertime. So here's that piece.
At this time of year, it's kind of hit or miss whether our town will be filled with tourists or not. As a popular destination for skiing, drinking, and spending money, Santa Fe is a winter haven for those who have the will and cash to travel here. I never knew how long I would be here, but after 10 years, I'm coming to terms with having an attitude towards our paying visitors as downright native. Some days, the town is just full, the literal traffic jams of Lone Star-plated SUVs, Yukons, Denalis, Hummers, semis, crowding the roads and burning gasoline at $2.50 per gallon into the cleanest air of any capital city in America. Old Hispanic grandmothers are driven screaming from local grocery stores by herds of five-year-olds clutching Starbucks lattes dressed in $1,500 ski jackets and almost yee-hawing at the doors. Yet there are some days in winter when it is just us, the crazy Santa Feans. We make the news with doggy seatbelt laws, paying for our governor's helicopter habit, and having code names like Oprah. Some days it's just the residents of the city different, making for quieter, more contemplative streets, traffic that moves slower not from volume, but perhaps from meditation, listening to some ranchero music, or simply the view. Many here, including myself, are not native, but transplants to the common dream that is Santa Fe, this city that lives as the symbolic heart of the Southwest, if not the actual urban artery like Phoenix. But buyer beware of this dream. Like many of the small cities of the West, there are few opportunities unless you make your own, and survival or rejection can be as swift as they are sure. Gaining a foothold in a place like Santa Fe is a different but understood vision for us all. the East Coast transplants, the New Age Californians, the secluded wealthy, the Mexican nationals, the Tibetan monks or Native Alaskans, and finding that first precarious foothold. Perhaps reaching up, grasping on, with just a few fingers. That moment that you do hold on, suddenly you're local. No more hitting the t-shirt places or eating a breakfast burrito without green chili. No more speaking only English. And you get a free pass to enjoy the local knowledge, the trails, the twisting mountain roads, the scenes, the bars, the people, the hot springs by the river, and the city itself. Empty sometimes on clear winter nights, cold with the scent of sage and pinon wood burning in fireplaces, all under this blanket of surreal, bright, metallic blue moonlight and supremely clear stars that light everyone's dreams.
Chris Goldstein on The Journey Home. And that's a segment from Active Voice Radio. Very well done. And that got picked up, too, by another radio station.
That's right. That's right. I've had a lot of success on Public Radio Exchange and especially RadioForAll.net. There are these online distribution services. Public Radio Exchange was created by 10 of the biggest public radio stations in the country as a venue for new work. So it's a great place. RadioForAll.net, created as a free service for radio producers to reach other broadcasters. And the segments get picked up by internet streams, low-power FMs, and other non-commercial stations. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. Well, the podcasting business sounds like it's really something viable for getting distribution once there's some sort of sponsorship that can support the producer in one way, shape, or form. Do you ever see a way for this new alternative form of distribution to be able to complete the circle so producers like you, independent producers, can afford to put their work out there?
Yeah, and in fact, I think it's really coming full circle now for a lot of good reasons. Advertisers are recognizing it as a great way to have a message reach a very specific audience through mm-hmm. podcasts. Foundations and other nonprofit charitable foundations are recognizing new media and podcasting as an important thing to make grant funding available to for community broadcasters and people like you and I alike. And then further, there is a recognition on the part of the listeners where they actually will donate back to the podcast producers, and you see a lot of that going on out there. So it is coming full circle right now. You're going to see podcast emerge as a much more viable business solution quicker than video, on-demand video services will be. Audio is your companion to life. You can listen to audio while you drive, while you walk, while you snowboard. So audio is going to explode much quicker than video, which you're going to crash your car if you try and watch a video podcast while you drive.
Or strain your eyes if you try to look at it on one of those new iPods.
The iPod Micro.
Yes, you know, 1.25-inch screen.
It holds 1,000,000 songs.
Or about 10 minutes of video.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure having you here in the studio today. And before we track out of here with your final piece of music, can you give us a short promo for what listeners can expect this evening?
That's right. Tonight we'll have our regular segments, World Technology Update, the latest and greatest in human invention, creation, and discovery. We'll air Marijuana Policy This Week, a separate story from what you heard here. And we'll have three of our interviews with Santa Fe mayoral candidates Karen Walker, David Koss, and David Schutz.
Chris Goldstein, thanks so much for joining us today and lead us into this next track for the weekend.
Thank you, Diego. And we are going to get out of here with C. We're going to get out of here with our final Richard Cheese song. This is him covering Metallica, Enter Sandman.
Say your prayers, little one. Don't forget my son to include everyone. Tuck you in, warm within, keep you free from sin. Till the Sandman he comes.